BulaNetwork.com, episode 118. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of BulaNetwork.com. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm coming to you from the Yellow Studio in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, where today it is Thursday, February the 23rd, 2012. Here we are about entrepreneurship, business building, marketing, and sales. Yeah, that's going to be the focus today. And personal growth. So whatever floats your boat. And today, we're going to tackle, seems to be the kind of the flow that I'm in lately and talking about sales. But I want to talk with you primarily about some things that we can avoid, some ways that we can improve our selling skills, whether we are selling by phone, whether we are selling by Skype, whether we are selling by GoToMeeting, but all of these virtual formats that we have available to us to sell today. And it is different. It is different. It is different than face-to-face selling. Now, there are some enormous similarities, but there are some distinct differences as well when we are not standing in the same room watching, paying attention to. I mean, for instance, in face-to-face selling, you can read somebody's body language, you can read their facial expression, and when you're in a virtual meeting, whether that is a phone call or some other technology, you may not be able to do that. I mean, unless you are on webcam, hard to do. Hard to tell how something is going over. In recent weeks, I've just encountered some pretty dreadful performances, and that coupled with an article that appeared in Inc. Magazine. Well, it appeared on their website, and it was written by Jeffrey James. He does a column called Sales Source. In fact, that's his Twitter handle, sales_source. I'll put links to that in the show notes. He's an author. He's a columnist. He's a kind of a sales journalist. And he produces some good stuff. But this particular article was entitled 10 Common Sales Mistakes to Avoid. And the focus is on face-to-face meeting. And let's just kind of use his article as a little bit of a template. And we'll kind of go through this, and I'll point out some differences between some of these things, because his focus was things to avoid so that you don't blow a face-to-face meeting. I don't want to focus on face-to-face meetings. I want to focus on all of these virtual ways that we encounter prospects and potential customers and the way that we sell in today's digital online world. Now, I am a personal favorite of face-to-face, as I have called it in the past, toe-to-toe, belly-to-belly kind of selling. But increasingly, we find ourselves in situations where we're communicating over the phone, we're communicating by some go-to-meeting technology, perhaps Skype and other ways. But here are what Mr. James says are 10 most common blunders that sellers make during meetings with potential customers. Number one, being late to the meeting. Well, yes, that applies whether we're talking about face-to-face or whether we're talking online. He writes, if you don't arrive on time, it tells the customer clearly that you don't give a hoot about them or their time. And he's right. It does. So absolutely. be early is my advice. You don't have to be a lot early, but be early. It's one thing if the prospect keeps you waiting. It's something entirely different if you keep them waiting. Now, I'm going to throw a monkey wrench at you and tell you that I do not believe that you should let a prospect just keep you waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. But stories are legendary, particularly some big companies. I'm thinking of a big company that is based in Bentonville, Arkansas, that I will not name. You know, notorious for dealing quite heavily handed with vendors or prospective vendors. Do you do that? Well, yeah, okay. If you're calling on a behemoth like that, you very well may. I think respect is really the item under consideration here. We can argue about time and a variety of other things, but it boils down to respect. It boils down, if the prospect doesn't have respect for you and you don't have respect for the prospect, well, good luck. You might as well both just go to the house, because you're not going to do business. Well, you're not going to successfully or profitably do business. Number two, he says, failing to check your appearance. Well, of course, unless we're dealing with live webcams, it doesn't matter. You can sit in your pajamas and nobody's going to know. Failing to check your appearance. Number three, acting way too friendly. You'll just seem phony and salesy, he says, if you pretend that a prospect is like a long-lost friend. Approach each prospect with respect and courtesy, not with a glad hand and a back slap. That goes for virtual or digital or online communications as well, I believe. Now, I don't know that I would term it in friendly. I don't know that that would be, but he qualifies it by saying acting way too friendly. Well, what does that mean? I know people who act way too friendly all of the time. That's just their personality. Part of acting way too friendly can be humor. We have talked in the past about using humor when we are making a sales presentation or when we're encountering a prospect. Humor does not always work. It does not always play well. And in digital formats, where we are not face-to-face and where they cannot see our facial expressions and our body language and we cannot see theirs, I think it's real safe to say you need to be very, very careful in the use of humor, which I think falls under this third item here of acting way too friendly. It just can't help you if you have to explain humor or if you have to tell people that you're joking. You just don't want to put yourself in that position. If comedy is something that you're bent on displaying, then go to your local improv club, find another outlet, do a stand-up routine somewhere, but get that out of your selling habit. And it is a habit. I know some people who use it because it is part of their personality. I know other salespeople who use it because it's kind of a nervous release. They may practice sarcasm. They may practice just, you know, cracking a good-natured joke because, well, in some cases, silence bugs them. Okay, don't be that guy. Acting way too friendly encompasses this component of using humor to ingratiate yourself, to build rapport, and more often than not, it does not work. Now, if you have the wisdom and the experience and you're able to play off of a prospect and you get a real good sense of their sense of humor, yes, it can work. But as a rule, I would say just avoid it. Just avoid it. You can be perfectly friendly and you can even be folksy if that is your personality without coming across like you're just long-lost buddies. and pals. You're not pals. This is business. And you want to be friendly, but I agree with Mr. James. You don't want to act way too friendly. Don't be over the top. But come on, is being over the top in anything likely to be a really good way when we encounter a prospect, especially for the first time? No. And that leads into his number four point, and that is talking rather than listening. Well, now you've really hit on a hot button for me, and I've done some shows recently about this, so I won't necessarily rehash, but here's what Mr. James writes. Sales calls are about relationship building and gathering information. You can't do either of those if your mouth is moving all the time. Get curious about the customer. Ask questions. Again, I would refer you back to some previous shows that I have done, whether video or audio. Let's look back here, shall we? Let's do this live on the fly. On February the 16th, 2012, I did a video and a blog post called Build Rapport Before You Start Selling. I would refer you to that. I would also refer you to February the 14th, 2012, another video and a blog post that I did called Talk Less, Sell More. So I would refer you to both of those, and I think they will probably best sum up this fourth point of talking rather than listening. I will interject one thing here in addition to those previous shows that I've done, those previous YouTube videos that I've done, and that is when a prospect begins to tell you something or explain to you something, let them finish. Or at the very least, take a deep breath and pause every now and then to give them an opportunity to interject or to ask a question. I've been in so many situations lately where a prospect is talking, salesman can't wait for an opportunity to speak, and the minute the salesperson speaks, never again comes up for air. And it's you can just hear the crickets chirping because you can tell that the prospect, they're losing interest. And meanwhile, the salesman, he's holding forth. But Mr. James is 100% correct. You cannot gather information and you cannot build a relationship if you're doing all the talking. So shut up and sell more. Number five, arguing with the customer. Now, this clearly can happen face-to-face or it can happen in an online or a telephone call. He writes, if the customer doesn't agree with an important point, arguing is only going to set that opinion in concrete. Boy, that's a fact. Instead, ask the customer why he holds that opinion. Then listen. You might learn something. Again, it goes back to that fourth point. Listen, don't just talk. Now, I don't know about you, but I just so rarely have found myself in a position of arguing with a customer, and I would qualify this arguing with a prospect, and I'm not an advocate at all of arguing. What I am an advocate of, however, and I'm just going to insert it here, I'm an advocate of us doing our dead level best to provide the very best solution for the customer. I'm thinking of a circumstance that I was told recently. Business owner having a kitchen redone, and part and parcel of this remodel was going to be new cabinets. They had an idea of what they wanted in the way of a type of wood, and they called a person that was highly recommended, came over, had great references, was, you know, a real craftsman, really good at what he did, and he didn't argue with them. He just simply told them that he wouldn't do it, and he didn't generate an argument. He simply told them why he wouldn't, why he insisted that they would select this wood or that wood and not the wood that they thought they wanted, because he explained to them what would happen, that this wood that they thought they wanted, it was a softer wood. And if kids ran into it, it would dent the wood. It wasn't a hard enough wood to withstand the rigors of their household, in his opinion. And as a result, he was the expert. Now, there may be a fine line in this point of arguing with a customer in you providing expert help, expert guidance, expert service, as opposed to arguing. And frankly, it's probably all in the presentation. Well, no, it's in the facts of it. I mean, the fact is, this person knew more about wood than the customer. It's highly likely, you would hope, that you as a salesperson, you know more about the solutions that you have to offer than the prospect does. No harm in using that expertise, but you don't have to do it in an argumentative way. You can be the expert, and you can make sure that the customer, the prospect, understands that you are seeking their best and that there's a reason why your solution is going down one path that might be slightly different than the path where they think they want to go. Well, that's just doing nothing but educating. We're teaching the prospect. You don't want this wood. Let me tell you why. Well, now that's, for most of us who aren't woodworking experts, that's going to be a revelation. That's going to be educational. Okay, good to know. But in the process of that, we can likely find out, well, we selected that wood because, well, we like the look. And now what this person did is he said, well, the look is not a problem. Getting you the look that you want can be accomplished in this wood and that wood. Well, they didn't know that. Good to know. It's very different when we're teaching, when we're educating, and we're not arguing. Do the former, not the latter. Number six, according to Mr. James, giving a traditional sales pitch. Sure, you've got something to sell, he writes, but nobody wants to hear a sales pitch. Have a discussion about the customer's needs, then, if appropriate, discuss what you've got to sell. Well, you know, this really goes back up to number four, talking rather than listening. And this one has driven me really crazy the last few weeks as I have been in on some sales calls online, and it's just pitch. I mean, hello, my name is blah, 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 and off they go. And you just might as well sit back and put your phone on mute because they aren't coming up for air. And if they come up for air and anybody says anything, they're going to be shut down pretty quickly. Now, I don't know about the traditional part, but I would just tell you, just lose the sales pitch altogether. And by that, I mean, I have some preconceived idea. I have something that I'm determined I'm going to do it this way. I'm really opposed to that. And I'm opposed to it because one size does not fit all. Now, here's what I am in favor of. Rather than giving a traditional sales pitch, I think it's important for us as salespeople, I think it's important for us to think in stories, and I think it's important for us to craft meaningful stories. And I don't mean by that lies. I mean compelling stories. I think it's important for us to consider meaningful metaphors. There are lots of different kinds of businesses out here, and we're many of us are selling a variety of different things. I'm involved in sales and marketing, just period. And there are clients that are dealing in hard goods. There are other clients that are dealing in services. There are other clients that may be dealing in software. And any and all of these, we need to give some serious thought to how can we convey the benefit the outcome, the happy ending of a customer buying our whatever, our widget. And I just know from experience that using some good metaphors help, and we need to pre-think those. We just need to pre-think those. Let's go back to the kitchen remodeler. So he comes in and he has some preconceived notion. He's going to install certain kinds of cabinets, certain style of countertops and so forth, and he's going to do that in every kitchen? No. I doubt that the worst kitchen remodeler on the planet does that. I know for a fact the best ones don't. But they have stories. And they may have, you know, metaphorical language that they use to convey various ideas. Most all of us do. We sell best by telling stories that our prospects can relate to. And I think it's important that we pre-think those things. Now, that doesn't mean that we have this traditional sales pitch, and we're going to give that pitch to everybody, but there can be elements, there can be certain components, there can be certain parts and certain stories that we may tell that may have broad universal application no matter who we're talking to. But again, I don't think that we should approach it with, we're determined we're going to get this said. We're determined we're going to tell this story. I think we need to let the conversation unfold. And I think in this sixth point, one of the best things that we can do is exactly what he says. Have a discussion about the customer's needs. Have dialogue. Have conversation. Ask questions. Let them answer questions. Let them ask questions, and you answer questions. Number 7, falling short on product knowledge. He writes, if the prospect doesn't want to hear, I need to get back to you about that over and over. Make sure you're trained on your current products and policies before the call. You need to have enough knowledge. I don't think you should let a lack of product knowledge just stop you dead in your tracks. And certainly, we live in a day and age where some sales situations demand a lot more technical savvy than others. And it is important that you know your product. But, you know, do you have to, in order for you to sell Honda motor cars, do you have to be a Honda automotive engineer? No. It's not likely the customer cares. There are some things that you might need to know that maybe the average Honda car owner doesn't know. And no, you don't want to be the guy who's constantly having to run in the back room or having to put someone on hold or having to go find an answer elsewhere. And you do need to take your product knowledge very seriously. I guess my only caveat to this one is very rarely in my experience have I found the person who had the most supreme product knowledge to be the very best salesperson. Historically, I have not found that to be the case. Because you don't necessarily get kudos for being, you know, the sharpest knife in the drawer when it comes to the product knowledge. What you do get is you get kudos for being the person who could point out some aspect of the product that benefited the customer most or that, you know, really resonated with them the best. I've used this illustration and it bears repeating. If we're selling flat panel TVs, for instance, and we sell a Sony model, and so does the guy across town, and so does the other guy across town, and so does the other guy down the street, and we're all selling the same Sony television, and let's assume that we're all within horseshoes and hand grenades of the price, and we probably are, it's highly likely that the person who's going to get the sale is going to be the person who was able best to focus on what the customer wanted the most. And so we need to have sufficient product knowledge so that we're able to point out certain things that might better resonate with this prospect than that prospect. It may be that I don't care one thing about internet connectivity when it comes to my television. But the guy behind me, he may care about that very much. And so you need to know about that feature, and you need to be able to read me and understand, well, he doesn't seem to be all that interested in it. But the guy behind me who is very interested in it, you need to be able to read that as well. So you don't need to fall short on product knowledge, but I'm going to kind of counter that with what you really need to be sharp on. You need to be sharp on the prospect. You really need to listen carefully. And this is why in the digital world and in the online world where we aren't face-to-face and perhaps we can't see our prospect's face and we can't read their body language, we have got to listen even more carefully because we've got to listen to their voice. We have to listen to how they say things. We have to listen to what they're saying. And we have to pick up on the verbal cues that let us know we're on the right track. We're hitting a nerve here that is really resonating with them, and this is something that they're really interested in, as opposed to this other thing that maybe we're spending our time in our pitch and we're not getting a lot of verbal feedback that tells us they even care about it. Now, I'm one of these characters who's pretty blunt and to the point, not abrasively, but I have no problem at all asking somebody, even face to face. Certainly I don't have any problem doing it in this digital world of asking people, you know, I mean, is that something that, I mean, does that do anything for you? Is that a feature that you could see being of use? And you'd be surprised how many customers will say, no, not really. Well, you have just saved both of you a whole lot of time. Number 8, he writes, getting distracted by your smartphone. Yeah. And I got news for you. That can happen whether you are, you know, in an online situation or whether you're face to face. Now, if you're on your smartphone, hopefully you're not distracted by it. Yes, I have been on my cell phone and one text after another comes through because I can hear it. Thankfully, the person on the other end can't hear it. I never, ever, ever hold my phone down where I can see it. If I'm on my phone and I've got my earbud in my ear and the phone's in my hand where I could read the text and talk, I don't do it. And I would not advise you to do it either. I would not even think about multitasking while talking to a customer. One of the biggest pieces of advice I can give you is, and it addresses this situation and it addresses so many others, and that is be in the moment. Be in the moment. Focus your attention on the prospect. Listen carefully. Pay close attention. Be there. So many times today, we have these conversations with people in real life, yes, in face-to-face conversations, and we can tell they're distracted. They aren't any more listening to us than a man in the moon. They are a million miles away. Makes you feel important, doesn't it? Makes you feel like what you've got to say really matters, doesn't it? Okay, well, don't do that to your prospects. Be there. Be in the moment. Do not be distracted. Do whatever you must to maintain your focus on the conversation at hand because, again, you're listening for verbal cues. You're listening for inflection. You're looking for signs because you don't have this face-to-face interaction to read off of. So you've got to even be more focused. Number 9, he writes, letting the meeting meander. The customer's time is valuable. Don't have wandering conversation, he writes, that slowly gets to the point. Instead, provide a brief agenda of what you're there to discuss and be sure to stick to that agenda. Now, that's easier to say and easier to do when you have a face-to-face meeting because it's highly likely that a face-to-face meeting will hopefully have some kind of an agenda. And You'll know who's going to be there and what the topic is at hand. But let's say that you're in this digital world, you're having a phone conversation, and it's a prospect. Perhaps they've called you, perhaps you have called them, you're trying to connect, and now all of a sudden here's the moment, and you're connecting. And maybe you're connecting for the first time. Well, there's no agenda. Well, you should have an agenda, but there's no stated agenda between the two of you. You should be leading the conversation, and you should have an agenda to keep it as brief and as helpful as you can. The conversation has to be about them, about their problem, their situation, their circumstance, and how you can help. And the only way you can help is what you hope to accomplish in this conversation is, you know, I just kind of want to have a conversation and get my head wrapped around what your problem is and what the circumstance here, so we can try to move forward, and hopefully I can be a solution. And if that's all the agenda is, that's perfect. That's fine. But don't go all over the place. So many people I have found, especially in recent days, get in these conversations and they're all over the place. There's no focus. The conversation is very meandering. It can go from a golf game to, you know, family stories to this, to that, to the other. And by the end of the conversation, you could not succinctly sum up the conversation in a sentence to save your life. That needs to be your goal. Your goal needs to be, I can clearly and succinctly sum up this conversation in this sentence, maybe two. If you can't do that, you let the conversation meander. Shame on you. You've got to take control. Now, by that, I don't mean that you're controlling and you're manipulating the prospect. So I don't want to be misunderstood. You are controlling the conversation, though, because you are the service provider. You are the person providing the help, the solution. So just like the kitchen remodeler took control and said, no, that's not the wood you need, and here's why. Here's the wood you need, and here's why. You should also take control in similar fashion. Number 10, Mr. James writes, overstaying your welcome. Your prospect has hundreds of other things, he writes, that he or she could be doing rather than spending time with you. Set a time limit for the meeting and stick to it. Hear, hear. I'm amazed that even today there are people who will set a beginning time for a meeting and not an ending time. Now, there are a couple of different conversations, and I've alluded to these throughout this show. One is we're kind of having this discovery call, we'll call it. We're having an initial conversation to find out what's your circumstance, what's your situation, what's the problem, what's the pain, what's the need, so that I can see if I can help you. I will interject here that it is my habit, and I have done this all of my life. Somebody taught me this. I would tell you who, but I can't remember because I'm sure I was very young when I was taught this. I get somebody on the phone. First words out of my mouth are going to be, have I caught you at a good time? I'm not going to ask them, have I caught you at a bad time? They might say yes. I want to say, have I caught you at a good time? That lets them know I'm respectful of their time. It also gives them the opportunity, without being uncomfortable, to let me know if it's not a good time. And yes, sometimes they do. Sometimes people say, well, you know, as a matter of fact, I'm fixing to go into a meeting. Can you call me back in 30 minutes? Can I call you back? Whatever. You want to make things easy for the prospect. So I begin every phone conversation, have I caught you at a good time? I then set about to tell them, I don't want to take up much of your time, but I'm calling to introduce myself. So-and-so told me to call you, told me that you had a circumstance or a situation, and they thought I might be of help. And so I wanted to visit with you. Have you got a few moments to do that? 9 out of 10 times, they say, yes, absolutely. And we have a conversation. Now, they are already at ease, and now they feel very comfortable to give me some kind of cue as to whether or not time's ticking and they really need to get loose, or, you know, I just kind of let them take control of the time element. I want to maintain control of the conversation simply so that I can be mindful of their time and as helpful as possible and not overstay my welcome. Very rarely will I purposefully spend more than 5 or 10 minutes in that first conversation. But I'm going to tell you, there have been times where the prospect led the conversation and I found myself 40 minutes later hanging up because they had a lot to say. Well, I'm perfectly willing in most circumstances, in most cases, I'm perfectly willing to let the prospect overstay their welcome because, well, they can't. You know, a prospect can't overstay their welcome for me unless I've got something pressing and some hard stop. And if that's the case, I will always tell them up front. I just wanted to reach out and connect. You know, I'm glad I caught you at a good time. I've already asked them, remember, have I caught you at a good time? They will have said yes. And I'll say, well, I've got about 15 minutes here before I need to run, and I don't want to rush you, though. I'll gladly, you know, we can carry on the conversation at another time, but I'd hoped that we could connect and I could find out a few things here. And I quite regularly do that. And so I can put a time limit on it up front. Don't overstay your welcome. You know, all in all, it really is about communication, and it really is about effective communication. It is about, it's just about being wise. And sadly, I have found in so many cases that there's so many salespeople that just lack wisdom. I'm growing increasingly aware that an awful lot of this has to do with training. I realize that some people have a greater gift for selling than others. I don't happen to be a person who believes that selling is some natural God-given, you're born with ability. Do I think some people have a propensity toward it more so than others? Sure. But it can be taught. I just find that there are increasingly large numbers of some people who haven't learned, they haven't been taught, and frankly, I don't think they take the craft very seriously. I think there are people, I find myself running into people all the time who you can just tell they have this idea of how selling ought to be. They've not studied anything. They've not talked with anybody. They've not gotten any coaching. There's been no mentor. And guess what? They're the least coachable people on the planet. I don't know. I don't know if it's the fact that when I started, I was so young and impressionable, and I didn't want to learn it the hard way. Man, are you kidding me? If there was somebody 20, 30 years older than me and they had some tips to give me, buddy, I wanted to listen. I didn't want to blow a sale. I didn't want to blow an opportunity. I didn't want to find out by falling on my face. I think you should take the craft of selling very seriously, and what the craft really is, it's communication. If you can be an effective communicator, you can be an effective salesperson. If you can be an effective communicator and you can influence and you can persuade and you can be trustworthy and you can be likable, man, the world's your oyster. I'm telling you. You don't need me to tell you that selling can be a very lucrative opportunity for people. And no matter what your role in life, no matter who you are in sales, and you know that already. The Bula Network is all about this kind of stuff. It's about entrepreneurship, sales and marketing, management, business building. It's what we do here. Well, okay, there's a smidgen of personal development because, well, it's all about that. It's all about us getting better, doing better, improving, fixing what ails us, soaring with our strengths and all that good stuff. So I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast. You can do that over at iTunes. Click that iTunes icon over there on the right side of the website. I would love for you to subscribe. I would also love for you to give me some feedback over at iTunes. Won't you? Just take a few seconds and write a review. Right? We need to gain some traction. Right? We're always looking for more listeners, more people to pay attention. If you think the information here is helpful and you know somebody that it might help, please pass on the word. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is Bula Network, B-U-L-A, network.com. I'm coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, and I am inside the Yellow Studio. Thanks for listening.